Yes, morning everyone. Monday, April 22, the Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. Hope you had a fantastic weekend and a big week ahead of us. Of course, Anzac Day on Thursday and just an array of sport coming up later in the week. Gee, a lot of results to get through from overnight as well, from overseas. And yesterday, well, there were two blowouts, really. The Cronulla Sharks just obliterated the Cowboys, who were just abysmal, 42-6. Canterbury beat Newcastle. A lot of fallout from this game, 36-12. They're at a core stadium. The Swans, they really reaffirmed their premiership credentials yesterday for this season as well at the SCG with a 53-point victory over the Gold Coast Suns in Brody Grundy's 200th game. We had the Supercars. It was a great return to New Zealand there yesterday. Triple Eight dominating the second race of the weekend. Formula One, more grief for Daniel Ricciardo. We had A-League W semi-finals. We've got 1 week left in the A-League before, in the men's, before the finals there as well. And gee, I'll tell you what, the boxing yesterday wasn't that entertaining for those who got a look of Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney, with Garcia, who didn't make weight, weighing nearly a kilo and a half over, so he doesn't get the title, but he won the war on the day, and he's some character. And that was an incredible performance over there in Brooklyn in New York. And Magic Time won the All-Aged on Saturday. Broadsiding won the Champagne. Overpass won the Quokka again. And we'll speak to Bjorn Baker this morning as well. And it's good to have Stewie Clark in with us. Loz is here. Fellas, morning. How's the weekend? Stewie, a bit more soccer yesterday. How's the body?
Morning, boys. Yeah, a little game of old man soccer yesterday. A bit sore and sorry, as you are after every day. But what about the footy? I was, the Mighty Sharks. I'm very excited. Got home, sat and got on the lounge there and they were pretty dominant. Look, I'm not a Bulldogs fan, but there's something about the Bulldogs. They've had a tough, I'm going to say, 10 years.
Yep.
And they're playing some good footy. So you've got to give Cameron Seraldo and Co. A tick of approval. A bit concerning, Kalen Ponga. He's got a hip pointer injury, but now he's got some sort of serious foot injury. Just watching highlights on the TV here, but it doesn't look like it's going to end particularly well for Kalen Ponga for the next few weeks. He looks like he's in a bit of trouble.
Loza, how are you?
Yeah, how's the morning, weekend? Stewie. Morning, Mido. Weekend was quiet. Didn't do a great deal. Watched a bit of football yesterday, and you're right, Stewie. Kalen Ponga, he didn't look great after the game, did he? No. Sitting in the sheds there, moon boot on, crutches. So that could be a terrible sign for the Newcastle Knights, because we saw what they were able to do last year on the back of a Kalen Ponga masterclass towards the end of the year, where he just went on his winning way and winning games for Newcastle and just played some wonderful football. But they were ordinary yesterday, you got to say. They were ordinary. But the Bulldogs, they've shown plenty, I reckon, this year. They've improved every game. Their style of play is starting to develop. Defensively, they're a lot better. There was an incident in the tunnel with Jack Hetherington and Reid Marnie at the end of the game. I don't know. I saw some vision of it last night, and it looked as though Jack Hetherington must have known Reid Marnie and was laughing and looked like a bit of a G-up, but Marnie didn't take it like that.
I don't think it was. Still a bit hot-headed after getting Simbin. Yeah. Marnie comes up, shapes up. Then it was a decent shove, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a...
It was just a shove.
I wouldn't say go over the top shove, but it was. But when he was laughing, I just assumed that it was they were mates, and there
something
was a bit
happened
of
on the field
around
as well. There was a bit of you know.
Yeah, a bit of verbal, a bit of pushing and
waving, and a bit of laughing. Yeah.
But he might get fined for that, Jack. I'd say.
Yeah, you can't have a stoush after that.
No, you can't. You can't do that. But I mean, you know, but it was a push. It wasn't a punch. Things calmed down pretty quickly. But the Sharks were very impressive against the Cowboys side, who was so disappointing again yesterday. They've got so much to give, the Cowboys.
Yeah, well, they're
defensively, they're
horrendous.
They're terrible, Stewie. Yeah, right. That's their problem at this stage. They've got all the attack in the world, but I'll tell you what, I can't see them winning the comp if that's what they're going to dish up. And I can't see the improvement in their defence at the moment. So you still look at it, and there's a couple of sides there. You've got Manly, who are a dark horse.
Yep.
I thought the Warriors, and I'm still not jumping off the bandwagon of the Warriors, but on the weekend against the Dragons, I thought they were poor, but well done to the Dragons, because I thought they were very good. Yeah. And they'll give themselves a big chance this week on Anzac Day when they take on the Roosters. The Sharks are just a consistent footy team, aren't they? They do everything well. But again, I just wonder when they get to the big games at the end of the year whether they've got that next level to go to.
Yeah.
But Penrith and the Broncos, they just look to be the star. Reece Walsh, second game back from a broken cheekbone, just was in superb form. And the Raiders without Jamal Fogarty, that's a big loss. One player the Raiders could not lose, it was him. It was him. And it's going to be difficult now. And I don't know who will come in. They're talking about young Weeks coming in, but he's not a natural seven. And if you haven't got a natural seven, it's going to be difficult, because it's always hard to have makeshift sevens. And in particular, if you put Weeks and Strange together, they're two good players, but neither of them are halves and they're very inexperienced at this level.
So he's got a torn bicep, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's
3 months.
Yeah, so 3 months. They'll have to have surgery and reattach it and do all that type of stuff. And
yeah, sometimes you can play without surgery.
Yeah, they'll do whatever.
But I suppose the long term.
Yeah.
Because some of them, if they don't get it done, they have that big divot. It looks like a big divot.
They lose a bit of. They do lose a bit of strength.
Yeah.
And, oh, mate, that'll be up to the doctors to work it out. But he's a loss. Like, he's a massive loss for their team.
Because I remember coaching Anthony Watmo in a State of Origin, and they said that he did the bicep. And I think he only missed 1 week, but he didn't get an operation.
Yeah, right. Taped it up and got on with it.
Just kept playing.
But, old school.
But I think he now has that.
Ah, right, okay.
That divot.
Yeah, right, okay. It's you're right. It's just important. There's not many seven. Like, it doesn't matter which team. You can't lose your seven. It doesn't matter. Not everyone's got three sitting in the sheds, have they? Oh, you know, I'll just bring in.
Well, no. They're hard to get.
Yeah.
So if you've got a good one sitting in reserve grade, someone will snap them up quickly.
Put him in first grade.
Yeah, so you just lose that experience, you lose the knowledge, you lose... The two things that they'll lose, one is his voice and his kicking game.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the direction that he gives the footy team. So now you're relying on a young seven to come in and give all those instructions, get a strong kicking game, and verbally be able to move the team around. It's just going to be hard for them.
Have we been sleeping on the Sharks, Lozza? I didn't have them in my eight, which is looking ridiculous.
Yeah, I didn't have them in my eight either.
Disappointing you, Bucks.
But again, I think they're a very good side. I haven't gone to sleep them in terms of winning a comp. I think they're very good. And I possibly should have had them in the top eight. If I'm looking at my top eight now, I definitely would have had the Sharks in it.
Well coached too.
Yeah, but I don't know what it is. I think they're like Melbourne of the last couple of years, where they're always consistent, but they'll get to those big games, and I just don't know whether they've got another level in them.
Origin chat's now going to be fever pitch for the next 5 weeks. And the Blues number 6 jersey is an interesting one, Loz. We know Cleary will be in the 7 jersey. Cody Walker's the incumbent. Hard to see that happening at the moment. Jerome Luai's obviously there as well. But now Nico Hines will be putting his hand up. I was on Channel 9 yesterday. I rewound it to go through what I heard Gus Feilgood say in commentary. And I was talking about Braden Trindle, and he said, there's a street corner tip for him for Origin, Braden Trindle. So, but you know, he's playing good footy, obviously. But
yeah, he's playing really good footy.
Everyone gets Trindle a mention for everyone.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that on Friday. Like, you're not going to rule anyone in or out if you're Madge, because you'd be silly too. But what you can do is obviously look at their performances and look for players that are playing in winning teams and see whether you trust what they're doing on the field. And Trindle, he's playing some really good football. Now, I would have thought there'd be others in front of him, but I reckon he's developed nicely with his combination, and he's taking pressure off Nico Hines. Whether he'd be ready for State of Origin this season, I'm unsure. We've still got, another month or 5 weeks before State of Origin, so I'd reckon Madge will give Cody Walker an opportunity to try and find some form. Then you've got Jerome Luai there, who's been there before, and that Nathan Cleary factor.
And, of course, Mitch Moses is injured.
I wouldn't say Braden Trindall won't play State of Origin, but if you ask me where he sits at the moment, I think there's others in front of him, but the others in front of him aren't playing well. So if Madge is true to his word and he says, well, I'm going to pick on form, well, he'd be rocketing up the list.
Nico and Nathan together, though, Loz, it's too like for like, isn't it? Cleary and Hines, could you put them together in a halves combination?
Oh, look, I think you could put anyone together in a halves combination, but it's a short period of time. But one has to be the least dominant player. So you've got a dominant player, and then you're going to have a player that plays a secondary role. Whereas at their clubs, they're both the main focus.
And Nathan's going to be the dominant focus, without a doubt. Yeah. So you can't have...
Then you throw, if you put Yo in there as well, you know, obviously it's a... Yo will be in the 17, but whether he starts or Cam Murray plays 13. But, you know, that combination, and I know people will say, well, it hasn't been successful for New South Wales, Yo and Cleary combination.
And Luai.
And Luai. It might be something they have to go back to. But I think we just look and see and wait, because there's a few options there for New South Wales, but it's just a matter of getting the right combination and having the players mentally ready to go against a Queensland side who I would never, ever disrespect or write them off, Queensland, but their forward pack is a little bit weakened without the likes of Tino and Gilbert, and they have unearthed players over the years, and they might have to again this year in their forward pack, but I just think those type of guys are going to be big losses for Queensland this year. And Ponga, he could be out for a period of time as well. Here we were last week talking about, oh, who do you pick, Ponga or Welsh? You mightn't have that choice now.
He does look like he's going. Just the footage we saw yesterday after the match and in the game, even his hip injury, that doesn't look right either. Like, he can hardly move side to side. He can't take off.
I couldn't believe they left him out there, to be fair.
I felt a bit sorry for him. Like, I get he's courageous and, you know, full credit to him for that type of, you know, courage, but he couldn't actually move. Like, they were just carrying him in the field, and basically he was catching bombs, taking three steps and getting tackled, and that was his only sort of interlude in the whole game, other than moving the defensive line around.
When they were saying afterwards, rare foot injury, I'm like, this doesn't sound good. You know, they're saying it's not a Liz Frank, but those type of injuries can
be out for a period of time. Yeah. It's a rare foot injury, I would think.
Some sort of
without being a doctor or a physio. And I heard Adam O'Brien say it didn't look good. So he could be out for an extended period, Caleb.
And lots of fallout, particularly from that Dogs Knights game yesterday on the back pages of the papers. So the Telegraph, tunnel of shove, sin bin pair in off-field clash. And that, of course, is Jack Hetherington when he shaped up to Reid Marnie in the tunnel there after they were both sent to the sin bin late. So the incident is set to be investigated by the NRL, but let's hope they don't go over the top, Loz. Like you said, a little fine might do the trick there.
I think a fine would be enough, Middo. I don't think there'll be suspensions. The only reason I thought it may have been a little bit more serious than what it was the reaction of Reid Marnie. Because when I saw Jack jumping around and smile on his face, I thought they were mates, and I thought they must know each other, and it's a bit of a G-up in the tunnel. But then I saw Reid's reaction. I thought, oh, Jesus, there's a bit more to that than what I thought.
Bringing the game into disrepute.
Yeah. All that jazz. Yeah. He's a bit mad, Jack, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
I think he's a bit more than a bit mad. I think he is mad. he seems to be like a bloke on the field, though. Jesus.
You'd love to play with him.
White line fever.
Mate. Yeah, no, good luck to him. I'm not going to cross him. Jesus.
Dogfight tensions high as Ponga limps off. That's the back page of the Herald. Number one worry, so the Queensland perspective on the back page of the Courier Mail, Maroon's injury crisis deepens as Ponga limps off. Well, this could solve, not in the way they'd like, but the debate that was set to ramp up for weeks, what they're going to do with Caelan Ponga and Reece Walsh in that Origin side. Well, there's no doubt that Reece Walsh, if fit, will be the number one. I mean, seriously, that performance the other night, poor old Chevy Stewart, just one of those nights that they happen, don't they? But to the Raiders' credit, they could have done what the Cowboys did yesterday, and they didn't.
Oh, they could have turned it up for sure, but they didn't. I think they won the second half, the Raiders. Like most 18-year-olds, I wouldn't know of too many that haven't had a game like that. And I think everyone, regardless of your stature in the game, at some point in their career has had a game like that. So I wouldn't be too concerned because all the other things in his game are very good.
Yeah.
He's 18 years of age. He's going to make more mistakes as he goes along. But he's tough. He's a hard worker. He's got plenty of ability. And as long as that doesn't affect his confidence, this year, he's a long-term fullback for the Raiders.
I watched the press conferences. It's interesting to watch the press conferences. They must be the hardest thing in the world to do, those press conferences after the game. Especially if you're on the winning side, you sit there and, wax lyrical about everything, and then if you lost. But Ricky's, he's made that, it's all about the future, and he was actually surprisingly calm about the whole thing. I thought, he could have had a Ricky Stewart-style blow-up, but Matt, he was pretty positive about the whole thing.
Well, they're a young team, so I think, a young team. But as I said before, one player they could ill afford to lose, I think, was Jamal. His experience at seven. They've got a lot of depth in other areas. They've got a lot of youth out wide. But it's just that seven position which needs an experienced voice and an experienced player to be able to work your team around the field. And his kicking game has been on song this year. So, it's going to be tough to replace him.
Some Cowboys on the back page of the Courier Mail as well. Holy cow, what a sharker. That's the headline there. And on the back page of the Telegraph as well, Sam's living out a dream. And they were great scenes, weren't they, yesterday? The debutant, Sam Stonestreet, crossing on debut and right in front of his posse in the corner. I saw one bloke went crowd surfing straight over the top, head first into the ground as well. But it's awesome to see
dream.
There.
It's a dream for young kids. I listened to the commentary yesterday. As a youngster, he went in 2016 and saw his idols, and he's then got to live out his dream. So what a story that was. And it all came to fruition, as you said, in that corner where somehow all his fans, his relatives seemed to just it all happened, didn't it? So well done to him. He'll be living the dream. Big night at Northies last night, I would have thought. He would have snuck down there for a few beers and probably still had his gear on, just sort of wandered in.
Wouldn't have bought one, that's for sure. Sea Eagles and Schuster depart ways after 600K termination payout deals. Also on the back page of the City Morning Herald, Michael Chemis with this story in the Herald in the wake of the 34-30 victory over the Titans on the Gold Coast on Saturday night. Tom Trbojevic crossed for a double in that match, but just the situation in the background with Josh Schuster, this report saying that they've almost reached a termination agreement with Schuster that it'd be paid around $200,000 a year for the next three seasons, and that amount will count against their salary cap. And due to the unique nature of his contract, this article says that, Manly could have essentially sacked him, but with Schuster dealing with, personal issues, they're set to come to an agreement.
If you're a club, do you sign Josh Schuster?
Depends on how much, yeah.
That's the issue, Stewie. It's what some other club has to pay. But I like the way that Manly are handling it, because he has been through a lot. And there's some personal circumstances there that he went through with his best mate dying at the club. So I like the way they're being respectful. And hopefully they can come to an arrangement. And I hope that some club can pick him up and get the best out of him, because he's such a talent. But we've seen in the past, over the years, there's been a lot of players with talent that just haven't gone on. You've got to knuckle down. And part of your requirement as an NRL player is to be a professional. And if you want to be in the system, you want to earn money, you've got to knuckle down, you've got to train hard, and you've got to have the right attitude to get as far as you can go in the game.
There's some prerequisites to be a professional sports person. Yeah. And, look, I don't know the kid at all, never met him, but he's got to have the want to live to that standard. So hopefully he does. As you said, I've... and watched him play on TV. He looks like he's got some talent.
No doubt about that.
I think another club will pick him up. They'll put some performance-based clauses in a contract. He'll naturally have his time off, but I can't see someone not picking him up.
He's too talented for
16
someone
other clubs
not...
that are going to...
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's having an outright termination, is he? So if he went to play at Parramatta, they wouldn't have to pay, you wouldn't imagine, Manly any money for him. So I think they're just terminating his agreement. Yeah, exactly. So he's a free agent to do what he wants and sign a new contract. There are 16 other clubs that'll sign him.
And the big story out of the weekend, I guess globally, on the back page of the Australian, West wants answers to drug positives. And on the back page as well, it's been on the back page of the Herald here, swimmers trust tested by Chinese drug saga. How about this story, fellas? So heading into the Tokyo Games, 23 out of the 30 Chinese swimmers tested positive for a banned substance. For 3 years, it's all just been swept under the carpet. It comes out now that WADA, the World Anti-Doping Authority, along with the Chinese Anti-Doping Authority, have accepted that they were accidentally contaminated and let them swim in Tokyo. When you think of what Shana Jack, Peter Boll, and others have gone through, and you hear this, oh, it's the Chinese, you were contaminated, all done very quickly from before the Tokyo Games so they could swim at the Tokyo Games. And it comes out 3 years later. I mean, has this got the biggest stench about it of all time?
Oh, most definitely it does. Oh. I mean, if that was happening here in Australia or in America, other countries would be blowing up a treat and wanting to know why or how this occurred. And the only thing you can take from that is that it's a cover-up. Now, both sort of parties are denying that, and they're saying it's politically motivated. The Chinese are saying that, you know, they're trying to make all this up, and it might have happened, but it was contamination, and we've gone through the process of telling WADA, and WADA have agreed with us, but usually WADA don't agree to that type of stuff, do they?
Oh, it's just got...
You've got to go to court and you've got to go avenues to prove your innocence.
It's got a horrible stench about it. Come on, seriously.
If you're a swimmer now at the highest level, your faith in the game would be severely tested.
You're going into the Tour de France type school now, if this is the case. And I'm not talking current. Tour de France appears to clean itself up, but you go back to the 90s and you think about all the names that have... went through the Tour de France in the 90s, you know, starting with, obviously, Lance Armstrong. Mm. But you think about all those people.
Michelle Ford on our program a couple of weeks ago, and you know, she was talking about the East Germans when she was competing.
Yeah, correct.
Moscow and the regime that they were on and how big they were when they were lining up against them on the blocks.
And let's not sugarcoat this. This is not the first time that the Chinese swimmers have been
not
done
at all
anti-doping. It's not like they've gone, oh, God, this has never happened before. If you think back to, I think it's, I'm going to say, the 96 games.
Yeah, well, you had and you had the Sun Yang situation as well in more
recent
times.
I just remember those female swimmers.
Yeah, the ones
with the broad
shoulders.
I think that was the 98 World Championships. 98, I'm pretty sure.
It was in the
90s.
Remember
the photos of those girls, and I went, wow.
Is they training hard?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Welcome back, 1353-53. Stewie joining us this morning with Pup over there in the IPL. Gee, didn't Travis Head and Jake Fraser-McGurk tee off on the weekend over there as well? It seems to be an absolute run fest, though, Stewie. Like, who'd be a bowler, seriously?
Seriously, who would want a bowler? Oh. The scores have gone from 160, 170 to be enough.
280.
280 in one game. Mate, 222 and Bangalore... fell one short, 221. So if you get 220 now, if you got 220 back in the day, people would be like, oh, no one's had any chance of getting these. Nowadays, a bit worried they'll chase him out. Fraser McGurk, hasn't he just burst onto the scene? We saw a little bit of it in the Big Bash in a one-day game, but he's playing in Ricky's team. They're going like bastards, but he's about to earn himself a massive upgrade, Fraser McGurk, because he's playing some unbelievably good cricket.
Well, in that game, which Sunrisers Hyderabad won, they posted 7 for 266. Travis Head, 89 off 32 deliveries. His opening partner, Abhishek Sharma, The first wicket fell when Sharma went for 46 off 12 balls. They had put on 131 in 6.2 overs. It's just like tee off. What's going on there?
It's just the way the game. The game's just evolving, mate. That's all that's happening. And guys are not.
It's not good
anymore.
For the game. I don't care what anyone says.
I think it's actually a bit detrimental to the game.
Big time.
Because it's just what's going to happen is. You know, the
it's detrimental to test cricket, isn't it?
Yeah, but the fast. What, so everyone's going to get 50 off 8 balls now?
Mm-hmm.
Or 9 balls, or whatever it is?
Tell you what I have noticed, Stewie. Now, you might shoot me down because you would know more about it than me. Has India started to produce more fast bowlers than they've ever produced at any stage of their cricketing alive?
IPL,
I remember they used to come to Australia and they were like medium paces.
Oh, they'd have 3 spinners and one quick. Because of the IPL, they're just unearthing more cricketers. So some of the names you're seeing here, you never heard of before. And then you watch them play and you go, whoa. But bowling, massively, there's so many more fast bowlers.
Yeah.
They've got that MRF Pace Academy down there, which I think Dennis used to run it. Now Glenn's the sort of, you know, the head coach there. They're just producing bowler after bowler. And because they're so...
Now, it doesn't matter. I don't know whether they're any good or not, but, I mean, they seem to be bowling a lot... quicker than what they normally.
They look good. Mate, they bowl with good pace. A lot of them are up around the 135, 140. I think there's just more science going into it now. So they're actually needed. Whereas in the old days, to play for India, there were 12, you know, go on a tour, there's 16 spots, right? And then you played first-class cricket and the wickets were so dour and they'd all bowl spin. Because now you got 9 IPL teams or 8 IPL teams or whatever it is with a squad of 20 and everyone needs 8 or 9 fast bowlers. And you can't just have... overseas players, they've got to come from somewhere. There's so many more opportunities. And they're getting paid massive money to do it now. Like some of the money, some of these blokes, you know, we know what Stark's getting and we know what Cummins is getting, but some of the Indian players, they'll be getting just as much. We just don't know about it.
Starkey, 3 overs, 1 for 55 overnight.
That's right. That's right. Keeping it under 20s is always a good thing. always good.
Seriously, wow. Okay, heroes and villains. Just before I get the boys, some of your texts early. Hero AFL West Coast, villain Cowboys. Forgot their travel tablet, says Curly and Mackay. Morning, boys. Hero today is Jack Robinson winning at Margaret River. Villain weekend footy with only one game with a close result. Disappointing and boring, says Noodles. Hero Tory Lewis, 100-metre world time laid 9.
Mm.
I think it was the 200 metres, wasn't it, over at a Diamond League meeting? But she's going to be a star. Villain, the bunker. Embarrassing Bulldogs line decision. Attention to detail, not. JP from the Hill sending that one. And, in fact, I'll get the boys now. What have we got, fellas? Go for it. Stewie, Loz.
Mine is the Chinese, the anti-doping situation over there.
They're your heroes.
The world. No, they're my villains. They're my villains. Along with WADA, by not coming clean and letting everyone know what's happened there. And my hero, there's plenty of heroes to choose from, but I thought the Sharks were pretty impressive yesterday against the woeful Cowboys side. So they're fresh in my mind, so I'll go the Sharkies.
Well, I was going to go the Sharkies, but you've stumbled. That's okay. I'm going to go with Scotty Scheffler, who just is miles ahead in another tournament. It's his last 4 tournaments. He's won, finished second, won the Masters, and he looks like he's going to win this
he's
as well.
4 shots
but
up.
I should say that on the women or the ladies LPGA Tour, Nelly Korda's won 4 tournaments in a row as well. So I'm going to give it to one of those two. And my villain is, I think it's Lance Stroll. Did he drive into the back of Daniel Ricciardo?
Yeah, he did.
Like,
he did.
What were you doing, Lance? Well, Daniel's had a pretty tough start to the year. A lot of people saying he's passed it, all the rest of it. He has a good day out, qualifies. He's running 8th or 9th, and Lance Stroll just decides to run into the back of him. Randomly, too, I might add.
My hero is the great Lonro, which died on at the end of last week. And one of the more popular horses, just absolutely loved the animal early days, punting days. It was often short odds, but you know some of those victories, you think the Caulfield Stakes, the Yalumba Stakes as it was, and the Australian Cup, which we've seen a gazillion times, and then what it did at stud, just one of the great horses of the Australian turf in certainly the last, 30 years, and what a champion he was, and passed away. my villain was going to be WADA, but I'm just going to go rogue here and make it Adam Pengilly. You let the multi down with his selection. Some of us might have had, you know, a successful part of the multi, but Pengilly didn't. So I'm going rogue. I'm going outside the team philosophy, Loz, and I'm finding a scapegoat, and it's him.
Been listening to me too long, Jared. Finding scapegoats. That's my tactic. So you can't do it.
As you go, on the, any luck on the weekend? Did you do the
weekend? I was away, so I didn't have time to prepare.
What preparation do you need?
Well, I'm all over this. You know that.
Get the analysts in. Come on, boys. Sit in the room here. Let's go.
Okay, Shano. Morning, mate. How are
you? Good, Mido. Boys, how you going today? All right?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What have you got for us?
Talking to Dick Fane last week, he's spot on with the Boston Bruins. I watched him yesterday. They absolutely destroyed Toronto Maple Leafs. They are specials. Put your money on now. Forget all the Canadian teams. They're jinxed. I'm just watching New York Rangers. They've been the best side all year. I still don't think they can win it. Forget last year's win of the Vegas Golden Knights. Get on the Bruins. They're specials. Dark horse, the Dallas Stars. Look, my hero boys, of course, it's the Dolphins. I watched the Channel 9 telecast, and they panned over to the players' box. Kaufusi next to Tommy Gilbert, next to Tommy Flegler, next to Herbie Farnsworth, next to the Hammer. Seven players out, and they destroy Parramatta. Can you imagine if those seven played? It would have been 80-4. Incredible effort. Red and gold never fold. My villains, the NHL. Look, every time a franchise struggles, they just pack up and tell them to move. The Arizona Coyotes, last week, they told them, right, boys, you're all moving to Salt Lake City. Pack up your families, the managers, everything, move to Salt Lake City, and you're going to be known next year. It's not the Arizona Coyotes, the Utah Yetis. They could have moved them to Houston, which is a massive market, and they're screaming for an NHL side. The rivalry between Houston team and Dallas Stars would have been sensational, but they're sending them to some godforsaken place up in Salt Lake City. Mate, the NHL, they should take blame for just destroying these franchises.
Fair enough, Shado. We'll take your word for it. We appreciate the call as always. It was the NBA playoffs this morning. Boston have beaten Miami in game one in the East.
He's passionate.
114-94. He's right into the NHL. Playoff time in the ice hockey.
American sport, Shane. He's all over it. He's the Dick Fane, but he lives in Australia.
Yeah.
It is the NHL. It's out of the four professional leagues over there. It's a mile at the bottom behind the
basketball.
I've never got into the ice hockey. I like the NFL. I love the NFL. Mm. I can watch the basketball.
Yeah.
Mm. The playoffs are the best.
But the hockey, I just haven't been able to get excited about.
Apparently, live.
Oh, well, I've been live too.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
And?
No, didn't grab me.
What about baseball? Have you been to a baseball game?
Sorry?
Did you go to a baseball game?
I did. Baseball was another one.
Did you I found it very hard to watch.
I went to the one at the SCG here.
Did it, right, yeah.
And then I went to Arizona.
Yeah.
One year and watched a game when
it's
I was
hard
there.
To watch live.
It's there was more happening in the stands than what was happening.
That's right. There's not a lot going on, and yeah, you're right. There's all the peripheral stuff keeps you entertained because you're looking at like throwing pizzas into the crowd and the mascots and but the game. If you don't get a lot of hits, it's actually quite slow, isn't it?
Yeah.
We have Ross. Morning, Ross. How are you?
Hey, boys. How are we?
Very well, thanks, mate.
My villain is the Newcastle coach for leaving Ponga on the field too long. It would have made more damage to him, leaving him in instead of bringing him off. Now, I'll leave my hero till a minute. I'm going to talk about the Rabbitohs.
Oh, what mail have you got for us, Ross?
Righto. RC's flying back into Australia this week, and he's calling an emergency meeting.
Yep.
And he's going to bring back the three amigos that won the comp in 2014. He's bringing back one already, David Ferner. He was assistant. Shane Richardson's coming back ahead of football.
Yep.
And he's going to bring Stefano with him to replace Tom. And this is the big one for you. Yep. Michael Maguire will be the coach of South next year. And he will make Latrell move to the centres. And he was the one who switched Inglis to fullback. He likes moving players around. And don't be surprised if next year he puts Jack White in fullback and Young Gray at halfback. Write all that down for you.
Yeah, no, I've got all that down. Madge, I don't know.
He'll win this year.
I think he'll win this year.
He'll walk away a winner, like Wayne did. 1 year, one hit, get out. He wants to get back in the NRL.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be a good look, though, for Richo if he goes from the Tigers to Souths and takes Stefano with him.
Well,
I don't think a lot of people will be happy with that.
Hasn't committed to the Tigers. Right. He's got till June. And Richo's banging his head up against the wall of the Tigers because they don't want to leave Leichhardt. He wants to get to the corporates. They're against him. And if you read the paper on the weekend, O'Farrell was the third choice as the chairman. Mm. There's not all rosy out there with the board at the Tigers. You don't get your own way. And Richo likes, he's a very smart operator. Mm. And he likes Russell. Russell likes him. Russell used to get all the information on what was going on at the club through Richo.
Yeah.
And Sully and Demetrio will go because they're the ones that sort of force Sam out. And Sam's like Russell's brother or son. And that's upset Russell because he went their way and hasn't worked. They bluffed him. Russell's furious. There'll be a clean out.
All right. We'll keep an eye out for that then, Jeez. Ross.
That's a fair bit going down there. who's your hero then, Ross?
Souths are getting off the bottom of the table.
Collected the 2 points with the bye. Good on, mate.
Gave the bye a touch
on you, Ross.
I'll tell you what it shows, though, you know, like, even though they had the bye, and it's like a win. Having the bye is like the win when you've been struggling because you're out of the press.
Yeah.
No one says a word about you. You're out of the spotlight. And for the last week, no one's heard anything about Souths.
Yeah, correct. They have a day off.
Oh, mate, they'd be walking into training so happy. And they might even come out this weekend and beat Melbourne. Who knows?
Internally, that right in the team, when you lose, okay, you're under pressure, Souths. They turn up to train. The players, they can't not listen to it. But does it really? Are they that so worried on the outside noise?
Oh, you're not worried about the outside noise, but you can be if you haven't got strong leadership, you know. And as a group, you'd be talking to the players and going, boys, what's happened on the outside can't affect what's happening here with us. Mm. Now, we're not playing well. We've got to find out why we're not playing well and let's really rip in this week and try and get a victory and get a bit of confidence. But the more you lose, the more speculation around coach, speculation around who's coming, who's staying, speculation about players moving on. At some stage, that will affect you inside that group because you might be one of those players that they're talking about.
Yeah, right, okay. And then you're playing
for
yourself.
Then you've got two or three mates, close mates within that group that you start to confide in, and then next thing you know, you've got segregation and you've got people
little group
playing team for their careers, and you've got a group over there, a group over here, and you're just not all together.
Okay, more heroes and villains on the text line. Magic time in the all-age stakes, a hero here. Villain Adam O'Brien, Ponga wasn't 100%, not even near 80% fit, but picked to play. Price waiting in reserves, ready to fire. No name to that one. A hero, Tommy Turbo, for his thumbs-up gesture for the young kid who has stage 4 cancer. Small things like these make big differences to people going through that stuff. Villain is my dragon. Still filthy, re-released Lomax, as he's in the form of his career, says Chapo in Kiama. And he set off the top laws that he's certainly not jumping off the Warriors bandwagon, but all credit to the Dragons, 30-12.
The Dragons are strong. In particular, the start of that game. Well, the Warriors were all over the Dragons. And the Warriors could have had 18 points put on them like that, yet they showed plenty of desire with the way they defended and the love to defend, which is difficult to do. But they looked like they enjoyed being able to stop the Warriors from scoring points. And then when they got their opportunities, they just clicked and went bang. And I've always, well, I reckon the last 12 months, I've said that if you get a roll on through possession in today's game, an 18-point lead is not massive. And I think the Dragons showed that once they got a bit of football and got on a bit of roll, they started to get a bit of confidence and they played some good footy and away they went. So when you get the football, when you have the dominance like the Warriors had, you've got to make the most of that. Because if you don't, opposition sides, when they get it, if they can turn it around and put pressure back on you, you're in all sorts of recovering. And that's why that scoreline in the Dolphins game got out of control pretty quickly for Parramatta, is because the Dolphins found a way to score points, stayed close enough to the Eels in that first half. I think they were only down by 6 points, but then they folded Parramatta. Mm. And the Dolphins went on their winning way. But the Dragons, they've got a steelier look about them, in particular in defence. And I give them a chance this weekend against the Roosters because the Roosters haven't been setting the world on fire. But what a clash that'll be. Anzac Day, there'll be huge, what's that stadium hold now, 45 or 50?
No, 50, I think 53 or something.
Mate, that'll be full.
It'll be chock-a-block full. It's in that stadium when you're in there too. It'll be loud because the noise doesn't seem to.
Oh, there'll be a lot of Dragon supporters there.
Yeah,
this
they'll come out of the woodwork. The old Dragon supporters. There's actually three games on Anzac Day, isn't there?
Yeah, it's one in New Zealand.
Warriors, Titans,
and Storm South in Melbourne.
Yeah, down there. The evening. I think the Storm get the evening game. So, it's a big weekend of footy starting with Anzac Day weekend.
And even in the AFL too, GWS are hosting Brisbane at Manuka in Canberra on Anzac Day. And, of course, you've got the traditional Essendon Collingwood at the MCG, 90-plus thousand
people.
They have
a game on the Wednesday night too.
They are, Richmond and Melbourne.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, did you see much of the Swans yesterday, Lars?
I saw bits and pieces. I saw
some looking
highlights.
Good.
I saw Tommy Papley's goal.
Oh, and his mark.
Yeah, the Swans are looking good. GWS went down to Carlton. I watched a bit of that game as well.
They were leading a couple of times by double-digit margins there too and got reeled in. And even the Collingwood-Port Adelaide game, Port led that by 30 points and Collingwood came back and went all over the top of them. But the Swans yesterday, Joel Amati, 4 goals, Papley, 3, Goulden, 30 touches, Heaney, 28. They're a good side. Brody Grundy, just what a recruit for the Swans, playing his 200th. They're going to be there when the whips are cracking. And now Logan McDonald as well. He didn't have huge involvements yesterday. Kicked 2 goals, but he's got a swagger about him that he could play key forward for the Swans for years.
And arguably two of their better players to come back into the team.
Callum Mills.
Yeah, so
Luke
Parker. Got a bit of depth. Rampy.
Rampy as well. Bjorn Baker not too far away. We're going to speak to him after he's won the Quokka again with Overpass over in the West on the weekend. Just some results from overnight. Now, FA Cup semi-final at Wembley. Coventry City, who were somewhere around the middle of the second tier of English football, they're in the championship. They won the FA Cup back in 1987. Here they were in the final four going to Wembley against Manchester United. Well, they were down 3-0 with 20 minutes left. They've got it back to 3-3 and sent the match into extra time. Both sides hit the post in extra time. It went to penalties, and United have scraped through. 4-2 on penalties, so it'll be Manchester City after they beat Chelsea 1-0 on the weekend as well. Manchester City and Manchester United in the FA Cup final. But, gee, Coventry City nearly an absolute boil over there at Wembley overnight. In the Premier League overnight, Everton have beaten Nottingham Forest, and gee, they needed that just to get some distance from the relegation zone. The Toffees 2-0 over Forest. In the other games, Aston Villa have beaten Bournemouth 3-1. Crystal Palace have beaten West Ham 5-2. And Liverpool have gone to Fulham and won at Craven Cottage 3-1. And Arsenal beat Wolves 2-0 over the weekend as well. Mossy will, of course, be on later this morning. But the table has Arsenal and Liverpool on 74 points with 5 matches remaining. Manchester City 73. But, of course, they have a game in hand. They have 6 matches remaining, having played in that FA Cup semi-final over the course of the weekend. Locally, yesterday, Western United beat Perth Glory 4-3 in Perth. The big result over the weekend was really Melbourne City leaping the Wanderers into the top 6. They beat Western Sydney 2-1 there at Combank. So that's a horrendous result for the Wanderers. And in the A-League Women's semi-finals first leg, yesterday, Sydney FC won against the Central Coast Mariners 1-0. Melbourne City beat Newcastle 3-0. So it's looking like it'll be a Sydney FC Melbourne City grand final. Their Super Netball yesterday, the New South Wales Swifts beat the Melbourne Mavericks 67-56. The West Coast Fever beat the Sunshine Coast Lightning 81-56. Just some more of your texts for heroes and villains. Tomo here from the Canberra region says his hero is AJ Brimson. In a losing side, his effort and skills at fullback should be recognised. Villain, my Parramatta Eels. Poor efforts in Darwin. I know it was hot, but both sides had to play in it. New coach, question mark. Love BA and what he's done, but I feel like it's getting stale in the sheds and the supporters definitely want more. Well, we know with South having the bye and Parramatta having a defeat like that, where the blowtorch is going to be this week.
Oh, most definitely. And they were very ordinary, to say the least. And I think Brad Arthur said after the game, some of their players are choosing to be part-time footy players, and that's a heavy spray. Mm. And you don't say those type of things lightly after a game. So they'll be looking for a response this weekend. And whenever you don't win games, you're always under the pump. And it's the way you lose games that put you fairly in the sights of people. And they were ordinary. So they have to turn it around. It's not panic stations yet for Parramatta, I don't think. And I think Brad Arthur, we shouldn't be making a decision on each coaching career just yet. I think we wait and see how the season unfolds. We're seven games in, and
the halfback's missing.
Halfback's missing, and they're 3-4, aren't they? I think they've won three games.
I think that's correct.
So it's not panic stations, but you want to see a bit more resilience from them. And certainly on the weekend, it was unacceptable what they tossed up in the second half.
Yeah, it certainly was. I think Moses being out of that team, you got to put him back in. Just looking from the outside. You know, you put him in that team, a few things go their way. They look like they got caught short with the heat, actually, up there in Brisbane, which they shouldn't have, but it did look that way. It just looked like the conditions got the best of them in the second half. And it was stifling, by the way. It was ridiculous. Like, the mid-30s, 90% humidity, and the Dolphins played better.
Gee, do you give him a hope of beating Manly at Brookie on Friday night?
Not on what I saw on the weekend, no, I don't.
I don't think anyone will tip them.
But you just never know. Manly just scraped home against the Gold Coast. And thinking about both Manly and the Warriors on the weekend, both didn't perform up to expectation. And I'm just wondering how much that tough game the previous week against each other when they went through 10 minutes of extra time took out of them. So I think there could be genuine excuses there. And that's to take nothing away from the Titans or the Dragons on the weekend, but they both looked, they started well and then both looked flat towards the back end of the game.
You tend to get a bit of a bounce back too when they've played poorly. And it probably goes to show teams in any sport, when you have a bad day out, how do you respond? And that's what everyone's looking at. So if Parramatta respond better, well, Brad Arthur won't be the issue. If they play badly again without Mitch, then people will start to ask some more questions.
Yeah, and if they win next week, it's 4-4. So you say, oh yeah, without your halfback, that's a reasonable start. But yeah, you start losing games by big margins, people don't care about who's in or who's out. All they care about is the 2 points and how you're playing. And if Parramatta put in another performance like that, then yeah, the spotlight goes firmly on you.
And Buzz in the Telegraph today has spoken to the chairman of the Eels, Sean McElduff, and we'll have Buzz on naturally in about half an hour. He can tell us all about it, but that's in today's Daily Telegraph. But now we've got on the line after, well, just another triumph out west. Just gets overpass up, first up to go back-to-back in the Quokka. Bjorn Baker is joining us. Bjorn, morning, mate. How are you?
Yeah, morning, guys. Good to be on. I thought you'd lost my number. It's been a quiet autumn. You're back.
We're back. Will you tell us all about it? We'll describe the satisfaction of winning the Quokka again with overpass.
No, it was great. It's he's been a remarkable horse for me and all the team. And no, it was really special day. It was a great atmosphere. Obviously, the Ram Racing guys, there's about 80 of them, and they're a big bunch of fellas. And it was a great afternoon, great weather. It's a great place, Perth, I've got to say. Just really enjoyable. I think, if anything, the race got bigger from its inaugural year last year. you know, it was good to be involved.
Bjorn, how confident were you going into the race with Overpass? You know, he's got a terrific record over there on that track, but just for that race in particular, how confident were you leading into it?
Laws, well, yeah, I thought he was way over the odds. He's 2 from 2 at Ascot. I thought he was definitely better in the Winterbottom at the end of last year than he was in the Quokka last year. He got a little bit lost, so and his work on Tuesday was excellent going into it. So I thought he was sort of way over the odds, particularly with a really good gate. I thought he just put himself just off the speed, worked out beautifully, and yeah, he drifted sort of alarmingly, and you are always alarmed when the sort of market doesn't like them at all, and he's able to defy that, and as it was, it turned out pretty well. I guess the race went to script in terms of the three form horses sort of right there, but I thought he'd run a big race, no doubt about it. So, no, it was great.
Back to Sydney, do you bring Overpass back?
Yeah, we'll follow very much last year. We'll go straight up to the Doomben 10,000. He was very good up there last year, and he just got beaten by Giga Kick, who was the form sprinter in Australia at the time, and he probably had a much better run than him. So he's a horse that really, even the last 12 months, he's won twice in Perth, 3 times now. He's second to Giga Kick, second to Private Eye. So his form's around the best sprinters in the country is really consistent. Mm.
What about another crack at the Everest? Would that be on the cards?
Oh, like $20 million. a lot of outgoings, not many incoming.
Do you make phone calls or you sit back and wait for others to contact you?
Well, actually, yeah, it'll be interesting. Ram Racing actually took them last year, and I'm not sure if they're definitely going to be involved, but that's probably a live option. And a few of the really good sprinters have sort of bowed out or retired recently, with Paratrice retiring and Cylinder. There may be a little bit of an opening. He's running the last two. He's very good first time. He ran sixth. And last year, he probably didn't. It was the one race where he hasn't probably gone as well as hoped in the last 12 months. So, once again, the Everest, it's great just to be involved. So you've got to look that way. But, there's a few different options for him.
You made sort of mention at the start the Autumn Carnival's over. How would you assess your Autumn Carnival?
Yeah, I guess it's been it's tough. You're really taking on the big boys. You're going into, I guess, what we'd say in any other sport is finals weeks, and it definitely gets a little bit tougher. Osmosis has been a horse that I think is probably as good a horse as I've ever had, and it just didn't quite work out for him this autumn. Arapahoe, which is he's a good old stayer. He was going to head back to the Tancred, and he had a temperature, and you only need one or two little things to really throw you off balance. I found a very nice filly early in the carnival called Steffi Magnetica. She's going to head up to Brisbane, and I guess Overpass has probably saved the day a little bit, as he seems to.
Just give us an idea of some other horses you could take to Brisbane for us to keep an eye on, Bjorn.
I think a horse like Baby Ride is going really well. He's going to trial in the next week or two. Overpass will head back up there, of course. What else have I got? Another good horse for Derby called Iron Merc. I think he's going super. He trialled last week, so he's one to keep an eye out on. And maybe Renaissance Woman. She was okay in the weekend. She's definitely going well, but we may look at getting her up there as well.
Okay, yes, that's right. Renaissance Woman, which has been a nemesis of Foxy Cleopatra, hasn't it, Loz? And she ran midfield in the
jump. What happened to Foxy?
Mate, we're just giving you a bit of therapeutic work at the moment.
TLC.
Yes, taking a bit of care, love and care. Bjorn.
Giving her a cuddle.
Yes, she just needs to build her confidence back up.
Yeah, you'll get there. We'll get there. We'll meet again.
Well, congratulations. Can you give us just one or minor insight into the celebrations?
Well, I'll tell you what, after dealing with those Ram Racing boys after the race, I felt like I'd run a half marathon. And funnily enough, I've got to do a half marathon in 2 weeks. It's fair to say the training didn't go too well over there.
Ooh,
So,
what's that for? What are you doing?
Sydney, the Sydney one.
Oh, the Sydney one.
Mm. Well, do you not know my athletic claim to fame, lad?
No, I don't. Fill me
2007
in.
2007 Berlin Marathon, Hail Gabriel Selassie, one of the greats ever in the world. broke the world record, 2 hours and 4 minutes. Is only 2 minutes behind after the first K.
Only 2 minutes behind. What was it at the end of the race?
3:28.46.
That's
it. He was two hours and 4 minutes.
Oh, that's good. Right,
that's 41 K. It's 42 K's, isn't it, the marathon?
Sure, 42.2. He's got some prowess.
42.2.
You got a background in running?
No, but just I've got one pace, slow. But I can't keep going.
Well, great stuff,
anyway,
mate.
I promised a lot of ladies a quokka pelt if I happened to win the quokka. I found it was a little bit more difficult to get a quokka pelt than I thought it would be.
Would have thought so.
I didn't know what a quokka was until last year. Yeah.
It's all like a kiwi.
What are they on rotness, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, congrats to you and your team once again, Bjorn. Outstanding. Great theatre. Looks like that race is here to stay. It's done a wonderful job early doors as well. Thank you for your time. And, well, have a great week. And go well in that marathon too, that half marathon.
It's going to be a long way. Anyway, now that I'm back winning again and winners are grinners, BjornBakerRacing.com.au. So cheap, you feel like you're making money.
Love it. Thank you, Bjorn. There you go. BjornBakerRacing.com. She bought some yearlings, obviously, at the sales recently.
Quokkas are a little, like, little cat-looking type. They're about the size of a cat, right? They always look like they're smiling. That's the thing with a quokka. They're always... Get a quokka pelt. You might need a few quokkas, even though I'm sort of suggesting it's highly illegal. I don't know if it is, but I'm going to say it is.
Lucky he's a good fellow, Bjorn. He opened himself up there.
Oh, mate, they'll all come and get him now.
And I was going to come in with a smart-ass comment. I thought, no, I'd better stay out.
It's a wonder you didn't.
I was going to.
We'll speak to Ali Mosley. Sorry, Adam Pengilly shortly. Ali Mosley's coming up in an hour's time. Just some... more heroes and villains on the text line. Hero Max Presnell, retiring after 70 years of race riding. Great character and fantastic tributes here, written by Andrew Webster and Chris Roots on the weekend. His entertaining articles blending the old with the new in the racing game will be missed, and they sure will. Villain, yet again, the bunker. How is it not a sin binning for tackling Olam without the ball in a try-scoring situation? 12-0 and a player off the field could have changed the whole complexion of the game for the West Tigers, as momentum is everything, says Tiger Marty. Yeah, I think that's been a unanimous one out of the weekend, Loz. That should have been 10 in the bin. And yeah.
Well, even if it's not 10 in the bin, it's a penalty, isn't it?
Yeah. Certainly a penalty. Certainly.
And there was one, was it yesterday too? Or am I getting it confused with that was the one that stood out on the weekend? I think there was another one on the yesterday's game. I can't be sure, but whatever it is, they've been... ruled to be penalties, and for some reason they just let them go. Might have been in the Bulldogs game.
Can't remember.
I can't either. But there was one certainly on yesterday in one of the games.
Was a bomb one, and someone ran in, and just because he stood there or something, there was an odd penalty yesterday that was blown. No one had any idea what it was for. They were talking about it on the commentary.
Was that when Kennedy? Might have been, through and Drinkwater went up for the ball and Kennedy had eyes for the footy, but he touched him on the leg.
He fell awkwardly. Yeah. Or there was some sort. It was something like that. I don't think it was that one, but it was something like that.
Adam Pengilly coming up shortly. Just the final day of the RBC Heritage. It's been delayed due to the weather there in, it's in Carolina, isn't it? Hilton Head. Scotty Scheffler, surprise, surprise, 19 under par. Leading by 4 shots. There's a host of players at 15 under. Scheffler's through 11 holes in his final round. There are only two Aussies in this tournament. Both made the cut. Jason Day closed with a 5 under 66. 9 under for the tournament. Currently tied for 22nd. And Cam Davis as well. He closed with a 4 under 67 to finish at 3 under and tied for 49th. Now the Chevron Championship, which is the women's major... over in Texas, Nelly Korda, 13 under par, leads fellow American Lauren Coughlin by 2 shots. So Korda is 3 under through 12 holes in her final round. Gabby Ruffles, I saw, was best of the Aussies. And, she's 3 over in her final round, 1 under for the tournament and tied for 23rd. Adam Pengilly, good morning, mate. How are you?
Morning, Mido. Morning, boys. And do I need to have my mea culpa, Mido, after the weekend?
Just make it known. what happened, I suppose, in the multi.
Yeah, there was a reason why you wanted to distance yourself from my selection on Friday morning. He was very much like that, wasn't he, Loz? He wanted to make it known that I had the first leg, and
Well, that's why I can never trust him.
Well, I was more confident
going
in my
forward,
selection than
I'd
his.
Never trust him.
I understood Adam's, case for Coleno Fresh, but it was just in a very tough race.
Yeah, but you don't out your partner.
Well, I did, and it was proven to be the right thing for me to do.
Well, it just proves what type of human being
probably
you
does.
Are.
No concerns over here. but Magic Time, the all-age stakes, I mean, the conditions just continue to deteriorate through the day there at Randwick. We just got the Group 1s in.
Yeah, well, lucky middos to get both the Group 1s in. It was a tough day all around, wasn't it? And I think the Randwick track, obviously race like it's had a big carnival, at the end of a big carnival, it looks a bit tired to me. And the rain on race day, middo, it's just no good for anyone, is it? They chop it up, they get into the ground. And it's remarkable how we had Doncaster and Derby Day a couple of weeks ago with all that rain in the 24 to 48 hours before race day. And once the sun came out, it coped really well in the track race sensationally. But that annoying, drizzling rain on race day just was no good there on the weekend. And Magic Time was great. She's such a versatile horse. She can get through the dry. We know she handles the heavy. And Graham Begg, like, he always has a good horse in his stable, doesn't he, Graham Begg? And he doesn't have the most, biggest stable at the moment or has for many, many years. But she's been the flag bearer for a while, and she just relished those conditions there on the weekend. So much deserved Group 1 on the resume there for her again. And it was almost going to be a big upset with Amenable for Mick Price and Michael Kent Jr., a horse that went around at huge odds. Looked like he'd almost had the race in his keeping there at about the 100-metre mark, but Magic Time was a little bit too strong. I thought Private Eye was good, being ridden on top of the speed there on the weekend, but I don't want to take any away from Magic Time. She's a really underrated mare.
Now, broadsiding scores in the Champagne Stakes, we'll probably see again in the spring.
Yeah, he was great, Stewie. Obviously, the first colt to win a two-year-old Group 1 this season, which is quite a surprise. And I tell you what, at least it's asking the question, who's the champion two-year-old of the year? Because as it stands right now, I don't know which way you look, to be honest. Storm Boy was obviously so dominant, winning the Magic Millions at the start of the season. He was the best two-year-old in the first couple of months. Obviously, didn't quite go on with it to win a Group 1 throughout the Sydney Spring Carnival. I think Lady of Camelot has to be respected, given she won the Golden Slipper and was so good in the Blue Diamond. So, if you're asking me right now, I think she's the champion two-year-old for the season. Manal, obviously, she just came to the end of a very long preparation there in the Champagne Stakes and didn't quite get through the ground. But this colt was Johnny on the spot. That's what Godolphin need to do. They need to turn these two-year-olds and three-year-olds into stallions. And James Cummings has done that, winning a big Champagne on the weekend. So he'll be a nice horse for the spring. I'd imagine that target sort of races potentially like the Caulfield Guineas and maybe even a Cox Plate. But he got his Group 1 there on the weekend.
We just had Bjorn Baker on before, Adam. Overpass won the Quokka for the second time. Geez, he loves racing over there.
Oh, just on Bjorn, Loz, 3:28 for a marathon. That's a pretty pretty
mate, unbelievable.
Time.
I didn't know that.
Outstanding. Anything
that
sub
was a
4 hours.
Really good week, though. He's a man of many talents, Bjorn. Just ask him, he'll tell you. Overpass, he just loves Perth, doesn't he? Every time he goes over there, he seems to run well. And you've got to say, Amelia's Jewel was ridden a lot closer there, and she was there to beat him. And he was just strong and tough to the line under Josh Parr, and nothing was ever going to beat him there on the weekend. So I think you're right, Loz, to ask the question to Bjorn about the Everest. I'm sure the slot holders will start sort of making some moves in the next month or so. We've obviously got the sprint ranks are extremely open at the moment, but he's a horse that's been so consistent for a couple of seasons now Overpass, and I can definitely see him picking up a slot later this year.
Mate, you're at Shark Park yesterday. Are we sleeping on the Sharks? Can they win the comp?
Oh, listen, I think they're improving steadily year on year. They're going to be there and thereabouts. I had them in my top eight at the start of the season before a ball was kicked. Nothing sort of there to change my mind at the moment. I didn't quite know where they'd finish in the top eight, but the reality is, it's just going to come down to between the years, isn't it, for them, towards the back end of the season. When they get close to the finals, everyone's going to be talking about the fact they haven't won a finals game for 5 or 6 years now and lost, I think it's 5 or 6 finals games in a row. But the way Craig Fitzgibbon's got this team going, they're definitely improving year on year. And I'm so impressed by their depth in their middle forwards. Like, they've just got these guys who just keep chundering up the coming up the middle and just making yards week in, week out. And they still haven't got Darcy Manukin back yet. He's going to obviously potentially be back this week. So Yeah, they've been very impressive for me so far. They'll play some, I suppose, some premiership heavyweights in the next month or so and take on some teams that are a little bit more fancied in premiership betting, but they couldn't have done much more than what they've done so far this season.
Did I see Zach Lomax is now leading the Dally
M? Yeah, he is, Mido. Yeah.
Unreal, isn't it?
What a story. What a story, isn't it? He's been playing some fantastic football, hasn't he, Zach? And I've got to say, Mido, I was all over the Warriors on Friday morning. I thought they'd win and win well against the Dragons. But, geez, I thought the Dragons were good on Friday night. That was clearly their best performance under Shane Flanagan since he's taken over the job. And they might be a sneaky hope of making a push for the finals, the Dragons, they keep it up. So, yeah, it's shaping up as a really wide and open comp. It's been fantastic so far. And just before I go, Mido, can I just add a quick congratulations to a colleague of mine, Max Preslin, at the Herald. I know you just mentioned a little bit earlier there. He's pulled down the curtain on a fantastic career at the Herald. More than 60-odd years he's been writing for the paper, which is just quite remarkable. He's been a great friend, somewhat of a mentor in the last few years, and I've loved going down to the Melbourne Carnivals as Max for many, many years. I've got to tell you one quick funny story. Yeah. We did have one decent night on the drink down there in Melbourne, as you usually do when you go down to the carnival. And the next morning I saw Max and I sort of said to him, Max, how's the hangover? How'd you pull up? And he goes, son, at my age, it's not a hangover. It's a near-death experience.
Brilliant. Well
he's
said,
He's a
mate.
Fantastic guy. He's a fantastic guy.
Good on you, mate. Appreciate it. We'll chat tomorrow. Thank you.
Yeah.
Buzz coming up after the news.